This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today, we're talking about the housing insecurity that the pandemic has created throughout the state. Many have seen a loss of income in the past several months. But stimulus checks, moratoriums on evictions, and expanded unemployment benefits have helped to keep Hoosiers in their homes. Some of those benefits are set to expire in the coming weeks. When that happens, will we be facing a housing crisis? And if so, can it be prevented? If you have questions or comments on our show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail. Call us at 866-476-3881. Just give your name, where you're calling from, and a quick question or comment. We will do our best to get it into the conversation and in front of our panel today. Again, that's 866-476-3881. Joining me on Skype is Executive Director of the Indiana Housing and Community Development Authority, Jacob Sipe. Jacob, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Matt, for inviting me.
So the Housing and Community Development Authority is a state agency that aims to provide housing opportunities and strengthen communities in Indiana. How has the work of the agency changed since the pandemic hit?
Well, interestingly enough, our operations have not changed. Our mission has not changed. While we're working remotely, we still continue to provide resources to a network of organizations across our state to promote affordable housing and housing security and some other anti-poverty programs as well.
So, but there have to be different concerns surrounding the pandemic, right? An increase in the insecurity concerns or things like that. What have you seen?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the challenges that we have is with a lot of our not-for-profit organizations being able to continue to provide those services. You know, they've had to adjust to rely more on technology than we had. But, you know, the state as a whole, we really have focused in on the three areas that we've had some additional funding for. One for preventing foreclosure, also for preventing evictions with the rental assistance program that we announced last week. Additional energy assistance that we're now providing to Hoosiers. So those three main areas is really where we've leaned into to promote housing stability, especially for those that have been directly impacted through a loss of income or benefits related to the coronavirus.
How many people would you say, I mean, just ballpark, are in need of help in Indiana right now?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I wish I knew the answer to it because there's a lot of different data out there. Obviously, we can look at the unemployment data. There was some new data that came out today showing us around, 13% unemployment. So, you know, it's really hard to put your finger on it. I think also with the moratoriums and the on the foreclosure side and then on the eviction side, that may also be suppressing some of the challenges and understanding really what that need is right now. Certainly the need is great. We all recognize that, whether it be a homeowner or a renter, we recognize that people right now need some assistance to get through this time.
Indiana has been operating under an eviction moratorium since March 19th, which is well over 3 months now. In a few weeks, it'll be at 4 months. And last week, the governor extended the moratorium through July. I almost said this month. It almost feels like July already. There's sometimes some confusion around that term, I guess, eviction moratorium. Can you explain what the rules of an eviction moratorium are?
Well, you know, really, it's about you can't evict someone for non-payment of rent is what that really leans on. Now, other violations of a lease agreement that may constitute the opportunity to begin the eviction process. But for non-payment of rent, renters have the security of knowing that they can continue to live in their home until the eviction moratorium is lifted.
And the Indiana COVID-19 rental assistance program was also rolled out last week, and that aims to provide rent assistance in all Indiana counties except Marion County, which implemented its own program. How is the COVID-19 rental assistance program going to work?
Sure. Yeah. So first, we'll provide up to $500 a month for 4 months with a maximum of $2,000 for a household who has been adversely affected. Their income has been lost related to the COVID-19 pandemic. We can go back to provide rental assistance through April 1st. So that's where we can start that rental assistance, or we can move forward with that $500 per month of rental assistance for 4 months. And as you pointed out, it is for the 91 counties, and Marion County will have its own rental assistance program. We've worked closely with the Marion County in developing both of our programs together to ensure that we try to prevent as much less confusion as possible. There will be some minor differences in the programs, but you know, our work together on that has tried to align the programs very similar to that. The other thing is that, you know, a landlord, if you're a landlord, you know, you need to make sure that you accept the rental assistance because we are asking them to do a lease addendum to ensure that the renters, that their tenants have an additional 45 days before any type of other eviction proceedings would begin. So we really wanted to ensure that we think about the residents and ensuring that housing stability as long as we can. Now, the applications will be due on Monday, July 13th at indianahousingnow.org. That is a great resource. It's a great website. If folks aren't familiar with indianahousingnow.org, I highly recommend that they go there. Not only is the application there, there's a one-pager for renters that explains the program a little bit more in detail, and then also for landlords as well. But the website also allows for households to search for housing opportunities and also for landlords to post their units there online for free so that people can see where units are available. So the IndianaHousingNow.org website is a great website resource for renters and also for homeowners as well, for home buyers.
So it sounds like it's a program to supplement rent. It's not about full coverage. Can funds be used retroactively by renters? Say someone who is listening right now and they haven't taken advantage of it yet. Can they go back and help pay for April, May?
Exactly. So you can. You can go back and pay for April, May. If you've already made your April payment and you need help with May and June, we can do May, June, July, and August. We can go forward. If you've been able to stay current on your rent and you're going to need help, maybe you're on unemployment benefits and those expire, you know, in August. And so maybe the need is going to be August, September, October, and November. We can help with that $500 rental assistance for those months as well. So it's 4 months. It's either backwards or forwards. But the farthest back we can go would be April 1st.
So landlords have to agree. What should a tenant do, or what can they do if their landlord chooses not to participate? Is there anything they can do?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. It's one I wish I really had a good answer for. Most, you know, I'm talking to landlords across the state, and I would say every landlord I talked to said that they want to be part of the program if a renter came to them. You know, but there might be an individual or a household who hasn't made a payment since February. That's possible. And so in that situation, I don't, you know, it's really going to be tough for us to provide a program that would prevent an eviction because of non-payment. And so that issue right there has probably happened before the pandemic happened. But back to your point about, you know, if a landlord doesn't, you know, I think my conversations with landlords across the state, they've all said too, that when their tenants have gotten behind, 99% of the tenants are reaching out to them to work out a payment plan to get back on track. And so that's the main thing that I know that we're seeing across the board for all of our landlords and our tenants is working on that payment plan. And we encourage that also with our program as well for the $500 a month. Because you're right, you know, the $500 isn't going to cover most households' monthly rent. The average rent in Indiana is about $825.
And I mean, landlords aren't exempt from the economic consequences of the pandemic. When we're talking about it right now, what concerns are you hearing from landlords?
Well, you know, I'm not really not many. It depends too, because you know, landlords, it's a pretty wide range net that you can cast there. Some of them are much more larger corporations. Some are more smaller. May only have a couple of units, and so I think it depends on where you are. What type of landlord are we talking about? But for the most part, I haven't really heard too much concerns related from landlords. Most landlords are saying that, you know, their delinquencies have gone up consistently from April. I think April's delinquencies are around 6%. And I think the latest in June was we were at about 22, 23% delinquencies. And so, I, 99% of the landlords I've talked to, both small and large, are saying that those that are behind are reaching out to them and putting, and they are getting on payment plans to avoid any type of eviction for non-payment.
Well, let's talk about homeowners for a moment. Mm-hmm. What assistance is available to people struggling to keep up with their mortgage as opposed to their rent?
Yeah, we do have a monthly mortgage payment assistance program for homeowners who have lost their income as a result of COVID-19. We also have another program that allows us to bring them, once they're current, we can, or once they've been making payments and they're still delinquent, but they can continue to make their payments, we can also bring them current on their past due payments. So we have two options here for homeowners. The website is 877gethope.org. That's where you can begin the application process for our reinstatement or our monthly payment assistance. That monthly payment assistance would provide mortgage payment assistance for up to 6 months. That website there is available. Again, we can provide up to 6 months of monthly mortgage payment assistance for households, or if households can continue to make their payments, but they're struggling with getting their back payments that are still in arrears, we can help with that as well.
We're talking to Jacob Seip, Executive Director of the Indiana Housing and Community Development Authority, and we'll be back with Jacob after the break. And we'll also be joined by a panel of housing advocates. And if you have questions or comments for the show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. And you can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. And we'll have more in just 90 seconds. I'm Matt Pelser. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about a potential housing crisis Indiana could be facing as a result of the pandemic. We welcome your questions and comments on the topic. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, at 866-476-3881. Again, 866-476-3881. And we are joined now by three additional guests. Jessica Love is Executive Director of Prosperity Indiana. Hi, Jessica. Amy Nelson is with us Executive Director of the Fair Housing Center of Central Indiana. Hi, Amy.
Hi there.
Darius Ross is founder and CEO of the Ross Foundation and the Indianapolis Tenants' Rights Union. Hi, Darius.
Hello, everyone.
And we still have Jacob Seip, Executive Director of the Indiana Housing and Community Development Authority. Jessica Love, we'll start with you. Yourself, Amy, and Darius represent different organizations that focus on the issue of housing within the state. But in April, the Hoosier Housing Needs Coalition was created, bringing together several of these groups. Why was the coalition formed?
The coalition really was formed because we saw an immediate need for, standing up and being a voice for tenants across the state. Many of the groups that are part of the Hoosier Housing Needs Coalition had worked together during the legislative session this year around tenant protections and also eviction reform. We organically came together and then in light of COVID-19 realized that we needed to formalize because our work together was going to be for a longer haul.
And the coalition's been working to help make sure that the state doesn't fall off an eviction cliff come the end of the moratorium. What do we mean by that term, eviction cliff?
Well, Indiana already has high eviction rates in many of our cities across the state. Fort Wayne, South Bend, Indianapolis, top national charts even before this happened. And so we already are have folks that are you know, have enough trouble finding affordable housing, maintaining it. And so in light of the pandemic, which is just exacerbating this issue with income loss, you know, that is affecting landlords, but is also affecting tenants. And so what we, one, first of all, wanted to see was a moratorium to keep people in their homes and then to buy time to really get something up and running. And I think, you know, the program that Jake spoke to, you know, is an extension of that. But get things up and running so that the state and local units of government can utilize local and federal state resources, you know, to prevent people from being evicted. So the, you know, eviction cliff is where we, you know, think the moment that the moratorium lifts, we would see a surge. And we've used the language of a tsunami was our, you know, has been our fear of evictions. And so, you know, wanting to have some kind of runway, a program up and running before the eviction, you know, pause ends so that people at least have a chance to avoid an eviction. And I know just from our work, every time we have gotten up against the deadline for the moratorium, we've all of a sudden, and we're not, you know, we're an association, but we have people call us because they know that we've been associated with the coalition and say, my landlord is already threatening to kick me out because he knows in 2 days the moratorium is lifting. And that's just one, you know, example of the, but this is being experienced, you know, by many across the state who fear what happens when the moratorium lifts.
And Amy, what do we know about how many Hoosiers have experienced a change in their housing stability? What data do we have about who has been most impacted?
Well, as Jacob had alluded to earlier, it's hard to pin down the actual numbers, but we certainly know by the unemployment filings that Indiana has a pretty dramatic problem. And we had, during the legislative session, when we were working on fighting some bills that we felt went too far in restricting renters' rights, we're estimating that there was around 300,000 Hoosiers that, you know, were going to end up, you know, being impacted, you know, potentially as part of that. And I think there's, you know, a lot of other things for us to kind of keep in mind. As Jessica alluded to, before the COVID crisis began, Indiana already had a significant eviction problem that was making national news for both several of our large cities as well as our medium-sized and small towns. We're all being recognized for high eviction filings. We also have a significant affordability rate. There is only one county in Indiana where you can basically afford a two-bedroom apartment working, you know, minimum wage as part of that. We've all seen the news stories about substandard housing that people are being forced to live in simply because they can't afford to go somewhere else or don't have options on where to go. And then despite the fact that there was, you know, a COVID relief check that was provided, Indiana made the news about a month ago by being the fifth worst in the country in its distribution of unemployment checks. So many Hoosiers have simply not gotten the unemployment that is deserved for them. So you put all that together, and it's hard to put a firm number down, but we certainly feel here at the Fair Housing Center, and I know the Hoosier Housing Needs Coalition feels the same way, that there is a significant number out there about to be impacted.
Darris Ross, as the founder of the Indianapolis Tenants' Rights Union, you work closely with communities within the city. What are you hearing from tenants?
Yes. Well, tenants are in fear of becoming homeless when the evictions moratorium is uplifted. They are being threatened by their landlords and property managers as we speak. And we're talking about people who has been disproportionately impacted by COVID-19 the most. And if you think about it, it's you look at the numbers, according to the numbers, Black and brown communities has been impacted the most disproportionately. And these are people who are more likely to be evicted come to the ending of the eviction moratorium. And so a lot of people are in fear. The mental health and trauma is rising out the roof. And so we're trying to figure out how to accommodate the mental health and trauma of people's well-being and also help assist them in overcoming being evicted and providing letters of recommendations, resources, and services to them to assist them in this situation.
So this moratorium has been extended, the eviction moratorium. How concerned are you that 1 month from today, we're going to be having a different conversation? We're going to be talking about a significant spike in evictions. How concerned are you about that?
I'm very concerned because, you know, as everyone already alluded to, we're already nationally recognized as one of the cities to have one of the highest eviction rates. And so if New York City is presumed to have 50,000 evictions when their eviction moratorium is uplifted, and we're like neck and neck with them in evictions, then we should be having a large number as well. And so we got to be very concerned about where we're going. And then the biggest thing is we're still in the middle of a pandemic. This pandemic hasn't left this city or this country entirely yet. And so my fear is if Black and brown people are already being disproportionately affected by COVID-19, and when eviction moratorium is uplifted, then these people are more likely to be homeless and catch COVID-19, putting a spike into not just evictions, but into COVID-19.
Well, and let's talk about health. By the way, we're talking about housing insecurity today since the onset of the pandemic as it relates to Indiana, and we have a panel of experts joining us. Amy, what do we know about the links between health and housing security? Can you talk about the connection there?
Oh, it's significant. And I think what the COVID pandemic has shown us is that housing is healthcare. You know, there before the pandemic, there had been a series of reports being released about how your zip code essentially determines your destiny. And that's just very harsh to have to realize that where somebody lives determines so many things about their lives, including whether or not they will have high blood pressure, have asthma, their life expectancy rates. Here in Indianapolis, based upon census tracts, there's a 17-year difference in life expectancy rates in Indianapolis, just on where you live. And all of that has really risen to some good attention about the impact that housing really has. At the national level, very often, you know, housing is looked over when it comes to jobs and education. And we need to remember that housing really is the basis of everything. And it's so important that individuals have access to affordable, safe, accessible housing that's free from discrimination is what we like to say at the Fair Housing Center.
Jessica, the Hoosier Housing Needs Coalition has offered recommendations regarding short-term emergency rental assistance and homelessness prevention to state officials. So how do the programs that have been offered by the state compare to those recommendations that have been made?
Sure. What the state has deployed in its announcement last week is certainly an important part of the solution and is in response to recommendations that we have made. We've been in conversation with Jake as they were formulating their ideas about what to do. That program is meant to provide assistance to meet needs that aren't otherwise addressed through other programs. And the state has developed a hub and triage structure to deploy the funds. You know, ideally, that means that, you know, the $25 million that they have, or the emergency solutions grant money that they had previously announced, that various funding sources with various, you know, program parameters can go through the system and, you know, theoretically be seamless to the applicant and be more efficient in deploying those resources. So we, if it works like it's planned, we see that certainly as a potential positive. You know, the concerns we would still have, one, are about getting the word out in time for those who need rental assistance most to be able to apply for it before the moratorium expires and in time to prevent an eviction. And we're hoping that having the program launch on July 13th gives enough time before the moratorium pause expires. You know, I saw this morning that IHCDA is inviting faith leaders to a webinar on the program. And that's great. And that should definitely be an element of the strategy to have as many people understand the program and be a voice for it and a messenger, you know, of it. It would be important to know, you know, what the overall strategy is. That obviously is a piece of it. You know, what is the overarching strategy to message this to people of color? I know Dee is working, you know, on that and thinking about door to door. But, you know, also what's the strategy for getting the message to the places where unemployment is highest or income loss is greatest? Or, you know, we know that there are 211 calls have really indicated the need for rental assistance as a top need. And so where are most of those calls coming from? Is there a way to, you know, target those resources? You know, those are the kinds of, you know, things that we're talking to Jake and his team about. And they've been listening, you know, all along. But it would be great, we've said, to see a task force dedicated to this issue. I know that IHCDA is focused on getting money out in the near term, and we're not trying to slow anything down. But we definitely want to see, you know, leadership. I mean, Jake's team is doing their job to deploy these resources, but see leadership even more from the state level to not only address this near-term issue, but we think there is a long-term concern about evictions. You know, that evictions often come much later than eviction peaks often significantly follow unemployment peaks. And so, you know, mobilizing a lot of the right people, having more housing advocate voices. The state currently has weekly calls with a number in the housing industry, having more advocate voices there, and making sure that we're having a fuller discussion, having it be very diverse and inclusive to make sure that the messaging is being targeted. We're getting the message out fast and to the right places, and that we have accountability and continue to track who's getting these resources. And our biggest concern is it enough? You know, I wouldn't begin to pretend that I know everything that the state is trying to balance in terms of spending their coronavirus relief funds or rainy day funds. But I will say, while $25 million may be a lot of money on a normal day, in the new normal, I'm afraid it's simply not enough in this case.
Well, and let's talk about that, Jacob. Let's expand on that. I mean, state and local budgets are being squeezed right now from the pandemic. How does this affect the assistance that cities and the state can offer to people right now?
Right. You know, Jessica hit on one thing that I just want to reiterate, and I think it's all on all of us. And I'm glad that we're on this talking about this today. And that is communication, making sure that residents, households are aware that the assistance is available. I think she's absolutely right that there's a concern that folks, for whatever reason, may not, even though they have a need, may not apply. And I think that's a big concern. Indiana's $25 million using the Coronavirus Relief Fund. We're only a handful of states that are doing that. I was on a call on Friday with our other states, other 50 states, and I think there's only about 10 that are currently using their CRF money or rental assistance program like Indiana is. And so, you know, but when you throw in the mortgage assistance and the energy assistance, you know, we have that that tripod focus really lasered on promoting housing stability. One of the things I know Jessica's team and this group has really done a nice job with as well is opening up lines of communications with cities and understanding some of our other cities beyond just Indianapolis, like Evansville, Columbus, Fort Wayne, also have rental assistance programs as well. So you're seeing a coordinated effort across our state amongst multiple different stakeholders, including our trustees and our public housing authorities, all working together as we understand how we can provide assistance to some of our most vulnerable populations that are at risk of being evicted.
There's a lot more to talk about today, but we'll keep the conversation going after a break. We're talking with experts and advocates about how Indiana can provide or can avoid, rather, a potential housing crisis as we continue to grapple with the pandemic and the economic fallout from it. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Back now to our discussion on housing insecurity as Hoosiers continue to navigate life during a pandemic. And as always, we would love your questions and comments. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana, or just leave us a short voicemail with your name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. And we're joined again by four guests. Jacob Sipe is Executive Director of the Indiana Housing and Community Development Authority. Jessica Love is Executive Director of Prosperity Indiana. Amy Nelson is Executive Director of the Fair Housing Center of Central Indiana. And Darius Ross is founder and CEO of the Ross Foundation and the Indianapolis Tenants Rights Union. And Darius, we're going to start with you in this segment. Marion County has a different rent assistance program than the rest of the state. $15 million in federal CARES Act funding was designated to help with rent assistance there in Marion County. Is this enough to help everyone who needs assistance in Marion County?
No, not nearly enough. We fear that a lot of this rental assistance is going to go fast. The dollar within that $15 million, I believe that it should be way more than $15 million coming to Indianapolis. I know the state, when they vouch for a lot of federal dollars, Indianapolis is one of the biggest reasons why they get a lot of money for things like this with COVID-19. But sometimes it's not reciprocated when it comes to allocating out those dollars to Indianapolis. And so that's one of my biggest concerns is not getting the bucks of the allocation. And then also, when you get these items, where are they going? Where are these dollars going to? What community centers are actually going door to door, doing outreach to make sure the people who are directly impacted the most are getting the assistance they need? And you have to be more intentional now, because $15 million is not enough. And so you got to make sure that you are getting these dollars into the right people who directly needs these assistance more than ever.
Do you feel like that's happening? Do you feel like, I mean, obviously there's some adjustments that can be made during the process, but do you feel like we'll get to a point where the people who need it most are being prioritized?
I think we're going in the right direction, but for this time period, I don't think we will get there, unfortunately. I don't think we have enough time to get there before August 1st. But I am hopeful that we will get there in the near future to create something that's more inclusive and innovative to reaching people who are directly impacted the most in a non-traditional way. And hopefully the city heard us advocating for those things to happen. So we could be more effective, so we could be more impactful, and that we make sure that no one goes without.
Amy, what are the challenges to making sure that assistance goes to people who need it the most?
Well, there's a number, certainly of challenges. And COVID has added, some uniqueness to that. Very often programs offer assistance, based upon income. Well, income has been completely thrown out the door with COVID. Individuals who otherwise, may have been able to pay their rent timely, are now suffering, significant job loss and maybe for the first time in their lives experiencing housing insecurity. And I know that certainly at our office, we are getting calls from individuals who had not struggled before and are looking and really worried about their ability to be able to pay their rent long term, given the job loss that they have suffered and whether or not those jobs are coming back, anytime soon within there. And as Dee mentioned, again, Indianapolis, but this is a statewide problem, but Indianapolis just has such an affordability problem that really has not gotten the attention that, it deserves. People are struggling. They've been struggling for a long time. The foreclosure crisis wiped out a lot of wealth within our community and across the state of Indiana. And people have not recovered from that to this day. And now you throw in this pandemic that's just further exasperating the income inequality that we already had in our community.
Jacob, when the application for rental assistance goes live across the state, will it be distributed on a first-come, first-served basis among the people that qualify?
Yeah, what is interesting about that, and Jessica was alluding to it, is that there's also additional money that we're receiving from a program called the Emergency Solutions Grant, and it also provides another form of rental assistance, but that is targeting extremely low-income households. And so this single portal through IndianaHousingNow.org is going to allow applicants to go through there. And then if they're income qualified for Emergency Solutions Grant, ESG, we'll work with them and they'll go to a local community partner to work on establishing a longer term rental assistance program for them that fits. Now, the ones that that Amy was talking about, that maybe working families that have a temporary loss of income or have really experienced it because of the job loss or whatever, this rental assistance is only for 4 months. And so hopefully we can help folks in that situation. But behind the scenes, it's actually there's actually two programs going on. And again, Jessica mentioned, we all are really watching this because this is a model that other states are looking at as well, this single portal for rental assistance. And, so many times a lot of these rental assistance programs put up barriers for individuals and households to even access these types of services. And so we're really trying to identify ways that we can remove those barriers. And one way is that most time folks are asked to self-identify what program are they eligible for. And that's not fair to a household when they're experiencing trauma. So we're trying to remove that from the households and say, hey, if you're in a situation you need rental assistance, go to IndianaHousingNow.org, start your application, and we'll try to figure out what's the best program for you rather than putting additional stress onto a household to try to have them identify what program they should be applying for. Because there's also other challenges there. There's language challenges that Amy was talking about as well. Accessibility in terms of connectivity, because this is going to be through an electronic website that the applications come through. And so, if you don't have connectivity, that could also be a major barrier. We will have a phone line that'll be dedicated to households. We're also doing this all in Spanish, but if another family or household has another language that they need that's not English, we'll provide that for them as well. There are significant barriers there for folks. And so we're trying to be very sensitive and trying to find solutions to ensure that households who need assistance can apply in an effective in a way, and that also it's not intimidating for them.
Jessica, let's kind of dig into the process once people can get the ball rolling. So if a tenant does not receive rental assistance, it's been recommended that they talk to their landlord and try to establish a payment plan. What guidance would you give to tenants on how to have that conversation? It's a difficult one, I would imagine.
Well, I mean, I think, important to it I think everyone knows just the general context of COVID-19 and experiencing job loss. And so, you know, landlords are also, you know, in a bad position right now, too. We recognize that. And so generally, many of them, we do hear good stories. We hear stories of landlords who are coming alongside their tenants and helping them apply for unemployment insurance. That is not a universal story, but, you know, we like to lift up happy stories here, you know, in Indiana when we can. So start the conversation. Also, you want to make sure that things are in writing, you know, so that it's documented that you've had those conversations. This is what we have arranged, amending your contracts, you know, and seeking out legal services, you know, where you can. Now, certain programs have Indiana Legal Services, you know, can come alongside folks to help prevent evictions. They have, you know, you have to qualify for their program and do an application. Neighborhood Christian Legal Clinic also is in that work. And so so if you are having issues with making those arrangements, getting them documented, I would seek outside help and know that there are resources that can come alongside you that, you know, wouldn't be, you know, cost prohibitive for you to participate in.
And we know that landlords are key to this process. Jacob, are there incentives, would you say, for a landlord to participate in the rental assistance program?
Incentives? Yeah. You know, one thing that we really thought about was to making a direct payment to the landlord. And IUCDA is going to make those direct payments. So it's not filtering through another not-for-profit, you know, another organization, or it's not filtering through the landlord. It is a direct electronic funds transfer that will be made once the landlord signs that lease addendum. That payment will be made directly to the landlord. So yeah, I think there is a great incentive there for landlords to participate, knowing that those funds are going to go directly to them.
And so, Jessica, per this conversation, we know that most landlords are willing to play ball here. But in the case that a landlord is not willing, they refuse to participate in the rental assistance program, should a tenant still try to speak with them?
If their landlord is not aware of the program, I mean, I think that part of the problem may be awareness. So making sure they understand, you know, how much they could receive in rental assistance, that the program does have this maximum of $2,000, you know, $500 per month. And generally that often is in the best interest, you know, of the landlord. Obviously the added benefit to the tenant is that 45 extra days after the landlord has accepted the rental assistance, that they will not evict. And so I think that, you know, is an important element to give, you know, folks a little bit more time to come back up with the additional funds to pay for their rent if they've gotten behind. You know, as Jake mentioned, this is not covering all of your rent. And so if you weren't able to pay anything, you still have a gap, you know, in terms of what you paid for your rent. And so that relationship is going to be really critical going forward. In most cases, it's not in the landlord's best interest to evict. You know, turnover costs are expensive and going through the legal proceedings. And so being able to have that conversation, you know, helping understand that there is this, you know, win-win, and really win-win-win, because it has a community level impact as well, is really important.
Darris, when the eviction moratorium is lifted at the end of July, the extended federal unemployment benefits of an additional $600 a month are also set to expire at the exact same time. Are you concerned about both of these safeguards disappearing at the same time within a few days of each other?
Yes, I'm very concerned. A lot of tenants are very concerned and skeptical because they fear they already having conversations with their landlords. Landlords are already threatening to evict them as soon as this is over. One of my other concerns is the landlords accepting those assistance dollars, those are rental assistance dollars, then still proceeding to evict them, especially if they have excessive late fees or just don't want to have them as a tenant anymore. My fear is retaliation. For these tenants not being able to accommodate rent for these during this pandemic. And so I don't think it's a good enough plan in place to prevent this type of retaliation from happening.
Well, this is this is obviously a challenging problem to solve, and there are not perfect answers. But in your mind, Darris, what would be the ideal solution here, do you think?
Yes. I would love to see rental forgiveness for all. You know, I wish it was that simple, where everyone can have their rent paid back up. And so everyone could be start back over, like a reset. This COVID-19 happened out of the middle of nowhere. And, it's going to be hard to determine who really needs these dollars and who doesn't need these dollars. And then with the unemployment coming to an end, it's going to be another barrier. It's going to be another challenge to help them as well, and especially if they already are behind on rent. And so I don't have the perfect solution or answer, but what I can say is we need a more intentional plan to make sure that we are reaching the people directly impacted the most, because even with some of the $15 million being allocated out, what about the ones who don't have Wi-Fi or TV or access to any of these resources or services? What about those type of people who don't know anything about these resources, who don't come outside of their four walls, who are living in their homes, who don't have transportation? What's our plan to reach those type of people? What's our plan to reach the ones that's disabled? What's our plan to reach the veterans who are behind, who are struggling? You know, this is some of the things that I say that we need to have a more intentional plan about, because those needs are not being met.
And Jacob, I mean, a lot of things bubble up when we have something like a pandemic come out, or really any kind of big amount of strife. And has it further highlighted housing needs in the state? And does the Housing and Community Development Authority have any plans to implement long-term solutions once we get our heads above water?
Yeah, you know, it does. It continues to be a challenge. I am glad to hear that we're finally talking about how housing is healthcare. Housing is our education. It's our infrastructure. It's our transportation. It's our jobs. And it's important that we continue to have that conversation, because housing is all those things. It is social determinants of health. And it's one of the bookends of social determinants of health. Long term, we have already pulled together with Purdue University a recovery plan that ICDA has been drafting up. And we went out with a survey across the state to get feedback on prioritizing all of our programs that we have. And that plan will be coming out soon. I'm really proud of the input that we got from that survey. We got feedback from all 92 counties, which is something that rarely ever happens when we're designing policy and developing strategy and action items. So the conversation's happening. We need to ensure that conversation continues to happen, because there are a lot of opportunities for us to improve our housing policy, our processes, and our communication and how we communicate to our populations across the state. Yes.
And I wish we could continue the conversation a little longer today, but I'm afraid that's all that's our time. I want to thank all of our guests for taking the time today. Jacob Seip is Executive Director of the Indiana Housing and Community Development Authority. Thank you, Jacob. And Jessica Love is Executive Director of Prosperity Indiana. Thanks to you, Jessica.
Thank you, Matt.
Amy Nelson is Executive Director of the Fair Housing Center of Central Indiana. Thanks, Amy. Thanks to Darris Ross as well, founder and CEO of the Ross Foundation. I'm Matt Pelser. This is All In.